Welcome to Cloudlandia.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Sullivan. Jackson. That's right.
Welcome to Cloudlandia.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, it's a beautiful day in the Winter Haven outpost of Cloudlandia. I can tell you that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day in the actual winter.
That's funny. where are you today? Are you in
Toronto? Oh yeah.
Oh, you're in Toronto. Okay.
In my basement, sitting next to my blazing fireplace.
I like it. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've noticed the seasons more since I'm here all the time. I've been, in the same place more or less going through the four season cycles. So we're right back to where we were just weeks before the COVID lockdown year started.
Oh, wow. Now, have you built a tunnel between your main house and the garden house?
We were told that the city, if it found out, would be very, very unhappy with that.
Oh, really?
And where are you going to put the dirt?
Ah, I see.
You know, it's the prison break. We're in the prison.
Well, you have a cottage. You have a cottage.
yes, indeed. But no, it's been great because we've devoted the cottage house, which we built, when was that? Probably about 3 years, which was for parties, which, a lot of parties where Babs and I are party people. In terms of giving them, we like to put on parties. And for our strategic coach entrepreneurs when they come to town. But that's been out, you can't do that during social distancing. What will I call it? It's a form of rationing social
prohibition. Let's call it social prohibition.
It's kind of like rationing and prohibition. We're going through two experiences here. So we just decided that we would, we wouldn't split our personal life and work life in the same place. So we have a cottage with three floors actually. But Babs has a stand up. She likes to stand up for her meetings, and I'm in the basement. And you've been down there; it's very comfortable. The one thing that makes a basement not a basement is if you build it with high ceilings. One of the things I've noticed is that most people create a space called a basement, but they make the height too low for my liking.
Yes.
But we have 10-foot ceilings in all of our houses, and it's, it's very, very nice. It's very, very nice.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, there's nothing to dislike about our concentrated engagement with Cloudlandia over the last 12 months.
No, and it's been exactly
nothing
to, now 12.
Nothing.
It's been
nothing to dislike
almost exactly 12 months, right?
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, our actual close down date was the 13th of March. A year ago, you and I were in Boulder, Colorado, because we had our three zone summit just about this time last year.
Well, we were in Scottsdale, Arizona, is what you meant to say.
Not Boulder,
Colorado.
We were at the Boulders.
That's right.
North Scottsdale. I think it's north. Northern part of Scottsdale. And Tuesday we'll be at another summit. And as we did last year, the kickoff was Dean Jackson,
With oh, adventures. Am I the kickoff again? Oh, this will be
you're great. The kickoff.
You're okay, the kickoff. I love yeah, it. Yeah,
so the way we'll do it is I have three questions for everybody, and they're general questions. So not only the Free Zone entrepreneurs, but their team members and their guests can equally engage with these questions and answer them, and then we'll put everybody in breakout sessions just for the first 15, 20 minutes just to warm things up. And then I will introduce Mr. Jackson, who has another riveting tale from Cloudlandia.
I love it. This will be good. The Cloudlandia files as it's growing.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
It's a whole different world even than it was last year.
And I sent you a bit of a framework this morning to consider.
I got that, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
It's perfect. And, we were on the same. We were on the same page with that, so that's good.
Yeah, yeah. I had a terrific YouTube workshop. You know, I'm every quarter or so, I'm putting on a Zoom, not a YouTube, but a Zoom Zoom workshop to talk about Zoom. And in some of them, we talk. You know, people who have all sorts of tips and techniques. They come on and they talk about their tips and techniques. But this time, I had two stories, a woman who lives in Scottsdale by the name of Michelle Bosch. And Michelle, as she told in her story, is an immigrant to the United States from Honduras and her husband from Germany. So they have met and married and settled down in Scottsdale. And they went into purchasing land, just raw land, and then, you know, letting it appreciate in price and then flipping it for projects. And then they started to do building projects of their own with land and then sell the projects or have them as revenue generating. And then they started a coaching program to show other people how they could do that. And generally, they're people who are in their coaching program are people who are in jobs that they don't like, or, you know, as is the case over the last year, had lost their jobs. And then she was telling just the sheer you know, challenge that she was confronted with because everything she was doing was in person, and in person was wiped off, you know, as it was for you, as it was for me. And then just talked about her Zoom transformation over the last year. And it was just really, really great. And then the second speaker, so, you know, I would have thinking with that. And I said, okay, now what insights did you get from Michelle's story? And then in the second hour, I had a very interesting man by the name of Juan Sanchez, who actually lives in Guatemala. He's both Michelle and Juan are 10 times participants in Strategic Coach. And Juan has a big company. He's got about 2,000 employees, and they do private label clothing manufacture for a big U.S. and global brands. And he was talking about all the work that he had done over the last 5 years or so of really involving his team with the teams of the, you know, the brand retailers, and how, you know, the companies, you know, and famous brands would bring their teams to Guatemala and they would design products together. And of course that was completely eliminated. So he created, you know, he used everything off the shelf that he could from Zoom and other technologies. And he created what is called a design creativity playroom. And the long story going right to the chase scene right here is that he's taken every expert in his company and created a design creativity team And then he encourages the manufacturers to do the same thing with their companies. So you know, it would be every part of their packaging, every part of their retail, and they would get together, you know, online, Zoom, 90-minute sessions, and usually, you know, a number of them over a period of a month. And he's reduced his idea to market time from around 6 months down to about 6 weeks.
Wow. Yeah, that's something. I mean, that speed of, you know, I like two things about what you're saying about him being a private label, being able, that's a capability that he's got to be able to make clothes. That's very similar to the company that supports Kylie Jenner within the cosmetics. Mm-hmm. And the thing that they have as the advantage is they can go from idea to shipping product in 5 days, a cosmetic line. And that's pretty, you know, that's pretty amazing if they find, you know, someone who's got a vision for what they want to do, to be able to execute that and get it out the door in 5 days.
Yeah.
That speed.
Yeah, and it's pretty, you know, it's really interesting. I mean, I was just taking, you know, I mean, I was using that as notes of how idea production, you and I are in the idea production, we're in the concept production business, and how quickly I can envision something and schedule an event and actually present a new idea at an event, because all the travel consideration of all those steps has been eliminated.
Yeah, and you've got the reach of, you know, that's an interesting thing of being able to conceive of something and literally, you know, I think you could go, I'm confident I could wake up with an idea and execute it by the end of the day for a workshop. If that was, you know, I mean, literally being able to, one thing I found in Cloudlandia, in that we're all kind of, you know, in one place now, one thing that I've found that's very interesting to me, and I just kind of stumbled on it maybe 3 breakthrough blueprints ago, I had an open spot. We had somebody who had to shift to the next one. And so that I had an open spot in the workshop. And so the day before, I sent out a message to everybody who had inquired about the breakthrough blueprint, you know, in the last 3 months or whatever. I sent a quick message to them saying, hey, I've got an open spot for the breakthrough blueprint tomorrow and Tuesday. If you can organize your, to make that work. Yeah. If you can organize, you know, to make that work, I've got a spot available. Right. And I was surprised that we ended up, there were 3 people who, you know, were able to drop everything and come, with for those 2 days. And I did that again and again. And what I'm finding is that there's always 2 or 3 people who, I find it almost that it's easier for some people because they don't have the logistics of traveling, that it's easier for them to see that they could rearrange and clear the deck from 10 to 5 on the next 2 days. It's easier for them to do that than to commit to clearing those things 30 days from now.
Well, the other aspect of that is the other side. So let's say they had, you know, they had something that was scheduled and they wanted to move it. But it also required travel considerations from the people whose schedule they were changing.
Right.
In other words, it was inconvenience.
Right.
It's really less inconvenient for you to cancel something than for the people you're canceling on the other side.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting, right? Like that, because of no travel, that it's literally just the time. There's no margins on it. Like there's no, because if you're in your Zoom environment, there's no margins of even needing to travel locally to get anywhere. You can it's just those windows. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I was, the next quarterly book, which we have one coming out right now, you know, in other words, it's the beginning of a new workshop. And the one that's coming out right now is called Innovation Over Envy. Okay. And, you know, it's one of my quarterly books. But the one that I'm writing right now for the June, July, August quarter is called Zooming Ahead. I've just, you know, sort of, put this. And so we're, you know, I'm going through the process. I'm just starting chapter four, and we've got three, you know, we've got the interviews, which produce the text, three of them in place, and we've got the cartoons for three of them done. And I was being interviewed by Shannon Waller, so I do a fast filter, which is, a basic organizing tool for me.
Yeah.
You know, so that's how we do our chapters. I'll do a fast filter on the chapter. And then Shannon Waller, who's a superb interviewer, she's been with us. She'll be 30 years in July. Shannon's been with us 30 years. And so she's just a terrific interviewer, you know, and she just takes me through the fast filter. And then the things I have written down, we cover, but then also, just like our conversation here, all sorts of things pop up as the conversation goes along, and all sorts of things they hadn't thought about pop up. And I was thinking, travel in our minds before the last year, travel was almost like the law of gravity. It controlled your life, but you never gave it any thought, you know, unless you were in danger. And I said, what I would call, there's the laws of travel gravity.
Okay. Right.
And that everything, when we would plan anything prior to a year ago, when we would plan anything on our future, we had to take into account the travel law of gravity, you know, which, pulls you back, pulls you down, slows things down, increases complexity. And I gave a little picture to Shannon, and I said, you know, I think everybody, maybe younger in their life, has had dreams of flying, that they could fly. It's a very, very prevalent human dream. They found that just about everybody has dreams where they would experience themselves, and it's they're always great dreams. Like everybody, when they think about their flying dreams, they always think of that it's not a negative thing. It's positive. It's not a nightmare. It's a very pleasant dream. And I was saying, so you know, every once in a while, we have a balcony on our main house that overlooks the whole property, and it's, you know, it's a very nice view. And I said, so one day I'm up on the balcony, I says, you know, I'm just going to step off to see if that law of gravity is still in operation. And to my surprise, I can float.
And I said, love it.
So let's say I float around for, you know, I float around for 5 minutes, and then I just decide, well, I'm going to go down to the ground. My sense is, in the next 24 hours, almost every thought you had about reality would go through a transformation just because of the process. something that had been with you since birth wasn't there for 5 minutes. My sense is that that's the experience that we've had if we've really engaged with Cloudlandia, is that every thought we had about the future, the past, and everything was governed by the gravitational law of travel.
Yes.
And then for a year, it's not been there. And to a certain extent, we've had a floating dream. You know, we've had a floating experience.
I think that's amazing because as you were saying that, you know, you think I've been in this kind of like orbital path where like rotating around the Earth that I know in any calendar year, I'm going to be in Chicago 4 times. I'm going to be in Phoenix 3 or 4 times. I'm going to be in Toronto, in London, in Amsterdam, in Sydney. And that gravitational rotation of there's a lot of energy and in between stuff to pull that off. And so all of that freedom now that I can instantly be in, even we've talked about the time impact of even doing a local breakthrough blueprint would be a Sunday afternoon till Wednesday evening bubble of being away from my home environment and being in a hotel and all the travel and things that go with that. And now it's a 10 o'clock to 5 o'clock, you know, discrete little window within my regular home environment with people, like I mentioned on the last Breakthrough Blueprint we did, had people from Hawaii all the way to Liechtenstein on the same in the same thing, all at home in their environment.
It's interesting because you know, probably the most persistent request that we've had from people who live not in, you know, not in Canada, not in the United States, or not in the UK, because we do the, we've done the workshops locally, you know, in those countries. But the biggest, the most persistent request that we've had is, when are you coming to Australia? You know, when is Coach coming to Australia?
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. And I said, well, you know, we don't have the marketing capability to do that from a time standpoint, because all of our sales salespeople are, you know, within the time zone reach of London or Toronto or Chicago or Los Angeles. So, you know, they're governed by how much we can, you know, travel. I mean, and you know, Australia is another day.
Right.
They're in tomorrow at any time.
They're already living in the future.
They're already living in the future. And, you know, and yet we've had clients who have been in the program continually for as long as 15 years from Sydney, at least Sydney or Melbourne, more in the eastern part of Australia. And they've done a 5-day turnaround to come for a single strategic coach workshop, you know, and they've done that 4 times a year. So 20 of their days, you know, at minimum 17 hours in the air. And, you know, the cost of that plus, you know, the jet lag and everything associated with that type of travel.
Yeah.
So last September, as a result, out of necessity, we created a virtual global program of Strategic Coach, which is 6 times a year. It's not 4 times a year, it's 6 times. And it's a workshop every 2 months, and it's a 4-hour workshop. And then you have in between connector calls like we do.
Yes.
You know, so most people are in touch every month. So they have their workshop months, and then they have to, a couple more connectors in between. So probably three times six. They're in contact 18 times during the year. And that's a very satisfying program for them.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very satisfying program. We have to date, and this just started last September, so we're, you know, approaching 6 months in it. We have as many signups for Strategic Coach from Australia in the last 6 months than we had in our first 31 years.
That's great. Yeah. That's perfect.
And they've been waiting. And they've been waiting. They've been waiting.
Or they've started and stopped, probably, some of them, you know. Yeah. And we started coming to LA.
These are entirely new. These are entirely new.
So wow.
I mean, we have comebacks. We have people who have come back. You know, but we don't count those as new registrations. They're, what we call outback ins.
Yeah, outback ins. That's good.
They were out, but now they're back in. So we call them outback ins. OBIs. And everything like that. But I was thinking of, we have a client from Singapore by the name of Roy, and Roy's probably made the trip 13 times from Singapore. It's 23 hours flight time from Singapore. So he comes on now. We do, he comes on for a Chicago, Central Time. So, what I would ordinarily have done in Chicago, we start at 10 o'clock rather than 9 o'clock. Toronto, we start at 9 o'clock. So he came in, and it was 11 o'clock. It was 11 o'clock in Singapore in the evening.
So, yeah, right.
An hour before midnight. And he said, so great. And I said, so how are you handling this? He says, I take a nap from around 5 o'clock to 9 o'clock.
In
the afternoon. And he said, I just get 4 hours in. And he says, that's great. And I don't schedule heavily tomorrow. You know, he says, I give myself, you know, time to get a good sleep. But he'll go from 11 o'clock in the evening till 5 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then but he's a global entrepreneur, you know, he's a global entrepreneur. So he's used to dealing with really far-flung time zones of people from around the planet. So he's already adjusted to that. But he said, I can tell you, he said, any negative thought I might have about doing a Strategic Coach workshop in the middle of the night, I just think of the 23 hours each way that I used to have to go.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And I wonder, you know, Ninad from India.
Yeah, from Mumbai.
From Mumbai. I mean, look at how much he was sharing with us at one of the workshops, how long the journey is for him. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Instant location. That's really one of these great things. That's like you were talking about. There's no gravity.
But it kind of unhinges your thinking about life, both your past life and your future life, just like being able to float in space would unhinge every thought you had, because it's all conditioned by the requirements of the gravitation. One of the things I was thinking about, Dean, was your notion of how long you can be creative and, you know, having bigger goals than that. How much that was conditioned by the fact that it was going to require as much or even more travel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, I was, when you were talking about that gravity idea, I was likening it also to two capabilities that when you realize what the marketplace for capabilities is right now, that basically anything that you could imagine is available at whatever scale of it you need. That you don't have, if for a creative person, the thing that's always been the biggest obstacle is the gravity of execution.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really kind of weighed down, you know?
Well, your vision, the confidence of your vision was very much controlled by the
gravity. Your capabilities,
Capabilities, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, by the gravity of your capabilities. That's the real thing.
Yeah.
Now there's zero gravity on capabilities. I want to say for anything, but certainly for almost everything. That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Especially when you take into consideration that so much of it is just, if you let go of the idea also that the not being able to afford it is a gravity in itself as well, right? That having to have your own money for something is is a gravity.
Yeah. It's, very, very, very much so, you know. Our salespeople, it took us, it took our sales team a bit of time to adjust to this fact. And I said, how many of your, maybes, like they really loved the program, they loved the whole idea of the program, but they said, it just doesn't fit into my schedule right now. It actually wasn't about their schedule. It was the sacrifice they were going to have to go through to travel.
Mm-hmm.
But it is about your schedule. I mean, in the case of, in case of Australia and Singapore, you're talking about five days rather than an event that takes place in 4 hours. And you're doing what you want to do up until it starts, and you're doing what you want to do immediately, and there's no travel time.
Yeah. And there's no expense of that. I mean, there's an equal, it's quite a, I would argue in most cases, it's an equal monetary commitment to the travel as it is for the program. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that is removed, and I deal with this in the book, I said, interpersonal politics is actually a spatial, reality. When you think about personal politics, so think of the, skyscrapers in the financial district of Toronto, the TD Center, Scotia Center, First Canadian Place, Scotia, all the big bank buildings. And, the person with the most politics, the most personal politics, political power, where does that person dwell in those buildings?
Mm-hmm. At the tippy top.
At the tippy top. And on the tippy top floor, where is this person's office?
Yeah, in the corner.
With the best view.
Right.
Best view. And how much space does his or her office take up compared with everybody else's office?
Yeah, more.
Yeah. So these are all spatial considerations. These are not time considerations. They're spatial considerations.
Yeah. Huh. I'd never thought about what does that mean? What's going on there?
So. Well, for example, I was reading, I'm a World War II history junkie, and where Hitler's office was. So Hitler was, had his own huge edifice. And an even bigger one was being planned for him, but they took over an existing building and retrofitted it. But when you were admitted into Hitler's presence, it was a 100-foot walk from the door till you got to his desk.
Oh, really? Wow.
And when you got to the desk, there were no chairs for you. And his desk was raised. These are spatial considerations.
So you're looking up It's like going to the
pharmacy. You're lucky enough. And he wasn't that tall. You know, he was 5'8".
Right.
I looked it up yesterday. Yeah, so... you know, Stalin or Hitler was 5'8". Stalin was 5'6". Mussolini was 5'6". Churchill was 5'5". Tojo,
really?
The
wow.
Military Tojo, the military leader of Japan, was 5'2". And Napoleon. Franklin Roosevelt was in a wheelchair, so it didn't matter how tall he was. And right. So these were the six major leaders, and the tallest is 5'8".
Okay. Uh-huh.
But in every case, with Stalin, with I don't know about Churchill. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't really play that much part in democracies as it does in dictatorships. But they all had raised seats, raised desks, everything when they dealt with other people.
Wow, this is amazing. There's something.
But these are spatial. It's entirely spatial. It's not time.
And that's all leveled in Zoom, is what you're saying.
Well, right? Certainly, yeah. A lot of it is removed.
Uh huh.
Yeah. So, for example, on a Zoom screen, which we're delighted, it's 25 or 49 right now. So we get 25 frames per page, or we get 49, depending on how we want to have it. Yeah. And but where you are on that page is strictly a matter of where you want to be on that page.
Yeah, I like that because I found that out, that you can move people around too. You can move the windows around. That's pretty exciting. Yeah.
Yep. And everybody's got the same size square. And the other one is every one of their backgrounds is custom designed for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, these are such... it's such interesting times, you know. We look a year into this now. It's just the most normal thing that we're talking about Zoom. Like it's the new normal for. I mean, it's the primary thing. I think I will continue.
Well, it is for some people. But for other people, it's completely absent. It's completely absent.
Right.
And I've been, I've been keeping a steady daily check. I check my, what I would call my commentary spots on the internet. So I go on the internet every day. And I've got about 12 areas that tend to produce really well-written, thoughtful articles. And those are the spots that I go to. I mean, the breaking news and that doesn't really interest me. It's the in-depth, usually about a couple thousand word blog or article about a particular topic where somebody, has really investigated this and misses what they come up with. And I've checked it since last March and not one on what you and I are talking about on Cloudlandia. There hasn't been one article that talks about the amazing breakthrough that's happened over the last 5 months. So feeling is the only ones who see it are the ones who want to use it, and the ones who don't want to use it don't see it.
Yeah. Yeah, I look at, and it's almost like it's a secret advantage of the ones who do see it. Like, I mean, some of the greatest breakthroughs that we're seeing are a result of like seeing this, there was a book called U Squared by Price Pritchett, I think was the guy's name. And it was just a little book, but he was a change management, consultant. And he started the book. He was writing and he said, as I write this, there's a fly in the window above the desk where I'm looking out the window here. And it is beating its head, trying to get through this glass. It sees where it wants to go and it can't do there. But literally 3 feet to the right, there's an open door with no obstacles for it to get to where it wants to go. And it won't give up on trying to break mm-hmm. through that glass long enough to see that there's another option right over here
yeah.
that would give it yeah. easy access to what it is.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
that's what kind of reminded me of this, that there are people who are resistant to pining away for the loss of the physical gathering.
Yeah.
And waiting,
you know,
sitting it out.
You use, use your formula, you know, that you've used for this. And, you know, and I've referred to that, you know, that it's good for you to, you know, to frame things in terms of, you know, CBR capability.
The VCR.
Vision. Mm-hmm. Yeah. VCR, vision, capability, and reach. Mine, and it has to do with the who are the who's you're looking for in your life. And
yeah.
it has to do with people who have ambition, people who have creativity, and people who have cooperation. Mm-hmm. The people that you will most want to be in collaboration with are people who have those three qualities, providing that you
yeah.
have those three qualities. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And my sense is that on a personal level, if you are not ambitious, if you don't have, you know, a real nose for greater capabilities that will serve your ambition, and if you aren't cooperative, in other words, that you can utilize other people's ambition and other people's mm-hmm. creativity. Probably this Zoom medium is not going to be interesting to you. It may even be threatening to you. It may
right.
be threatening to you. You know, you're going to be confronted with all sorts of people that make you feel worse about yourself.
Yeah. I think you're right. I mean, it's so...
Yeah. Yeah. So but my last chapter, I finish, you know, I have the little subheads in my little books, and it says,
yeah.
true, and almost too good. In other words, true, comma, and almost too good, because people say it's too good to be true. And I said,
yeah.
well, it's actually true, and it may seem almost too good.
uh-huh.
Yeah, because that's my experience. You know, I can float.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you may be pinching yourself, you know.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have that. You wouldn't want to have that capability and have it turned off in 5 minutes by somebody else.
Right. that's. Yeah.
I can fly.
Oh, man.
It's a bit like the Roadrunner and Coyote, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But, it's been fascinating to me to see this anti-gravity situation happening and the evolution of it. Like, we talked, I'm pretty sure I was the first person to bring the word ghost kitchen into your world in
yes you are
the idea of yeah
and,
which was
and,
5 or 6 years ago
and to on the present scoreboard since you did that, and that's been 2 years since you brought this
multiple,
topic
yeah.
up
mm-hmm.
maybe 3 other people have talked to me about it as part of their future plans.
That's interesting, isn't it? That now the, that when I first discovered that concept, it was new and rare and was just being discovered. It was almost like somebody figured it out and was keeping it a secret like that. And it felt like the reports of it. This is really an interesting thing now, Dan, if I look back on this. It had to have been, it's definitely more than 2 years, but probably not more than 4 years, maybe. That the when I brought it to your attention, it was like somebody discovered this was going on, and it was like they felt like the people were cheating. because it was all about that article that I saw of the 9 restaurants, we're one kitchen, no dining room. And that was almost like somebody was cheating by running 9 restaurants out of the same kitchen. That doesn't seem fair, or that's like an unfair advantage that they could have 9 restaurants but only have one kitchen. And then that became the thing that became kind of the standard, that ghost kitchens started being a way for traditional restaurant entrepreneurs to, you know, sidestep the traditional thing of having to have the total package of a restaurant with a dining room in a high traffic location with a whole front of house staff, that somebody could bypass all that, jettison the forward facing mainland part of it in favor of just focusing on the most profitable Cloudlandia part of it. And then that became the next level of that, became an infrastructure that allowed people to just have the facilities for ghost kitchens. And now it's evolved to the ghost kitchen as a service, where you just, if you're a chef, you give us your recipes and we'll scale it out to other. And that was, so there's a whole infrastructure that didn't exist 4 years ago. That's really the people who discover these things are creating big, big opportunities of it. I'm going to talk about
one reason
on Tuesday.
I think one reason why you don't hear about it is because it's such a great idea that people are really busy.
It's such a
And what I'm talking to you about is you actually don't have time for status because success is too big.
Right.
What I mean is that you know, would you or I go to some group who's not using Zoom and try to spend a couple hours converting them to Zoom?
Yeah.
Would you?
Well, yeah, I mean, no.
You wouldn't.
No.
You'd rather do your next cooperation and collaboration on Zoom, that experience.
Yeah.
So you only really want to talk to the people who are with it. You know, you only want to talk to the people who get it. You don't want to talk to the people who don't get it. And it was very funny because I you know, over the years with the Facebook phenomenon and the Google phenomenon, there's been various people saying, you know, there's no such thing as personal privacy anymore. You know, people don't have personal privacy anymore. And I said, sure they do. I said, there's probably billions of people that have personal privacy. They have personal, probably everybody on the planet has personal privacy about something. And he says, well, who are they? And I says, well, it's private. You wouldn't know who they are.
Right.
You know, like somebody, I mean, I keep, you know, there's just vast areas of my life that I don't talk about, you know, I don't talk about. The reason I don't talk about it is that there's no useful reason to be talking about it. In other words, if it isn't part of the common ground that I have with someone else, I'm really not going to talk about it.
Right.
I'm not trying to convert anybody over to my, you know, the way I've led my life and everything else. It's for me to make use of my own experiences for my own reasons. Nobody else needs to know those. But it's very funny because you're starting to see now the first, what I would say, pushback with Australia. basically saying that Facebook can't use news headlines.
News, you know, yeah.
News. And Facebook says, well, we're just going to cut Australia out. And I said, well, this is going to be interesting. Let's see
what,
let's see what a corporation can do against a nation state, especially when Google totally did the deal with Australia. Google said, sure, we'll do a deal with you. We'll do a deal with you. So he's out there hanging by himself, you know. And, and then Tim Cook saying, you know, we're just going to install something on your iPhone that gives you the right to say yes or no with anything you're doing. So my sense is that, you know, really innovative people will take massive advantage of something that's free before anyone else even realizes that it's valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you know? Chefs, people like restaurant. Do you know people who own restaurants? I know you're friendly with some of the ones in Toronto, but I'm just curious about what you observe as their motivation, because you think about what you were talking about, the spatial considerations. Like, is I'm wondering if in a chef's mind, what is the success or the thing of owning a restaurant? Is it the, is it the preparing the food every day? For do they just love the act of preparing the food, or do they love the idea of figuring out and crafting their signature dishes as the algorithm kind of thing? It's an interesting thing for me to think about.
I think it's yes to every question you could ask about it. And that's why I think it's hard for people to focus on a new capability, because they have to take it into consideration. They have to balance it against the multitude of different reasons why they're doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because
I know Susser Lee.
Yeah,
And it goes back to 1993, so it's 27 years, he's the chef. I mean, he designs. I don't think he's ever had a chef. You know, I mean, I think Susser is the designer of the menu, but he's the front stage presence too, because he comes out, he talks to guests and everything else. And I would say it's it's the total package. You know, the experience of going there, the space, the design, how people are treated, who his long-term customers are, his relationship with the team, his reputation, the number of stars that he has, and so my sense is that it's a 360-degree phenomenon, and he's delivering big time. Lee, which is the current name of the restaurant on King Street.
Yeah.
I mean, anything on the menu. He's got a set menu of, favorite, over the years, favorite Lee Lee things, and they're all available by delivery. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I'm seeing the evolution of where that, goes now, like with the evolution of the virtual dining. That's the newest, that's the evolution of it now, is virtual dining. We've gone from ghost kitchen to cloud kitchen to virtual dining as the newest iteration of the word. And it opens up opportunities for celebrity chefs to have their menus distributed in other areas. So
well, it's really interesting, Charlie. Charlie Trotter in Chicago was, you know, I think he's sort of broadly credited in American restaurant history as the one who really created the tasting menu restaurant, where you would go in and you would order a menu. You wouldn't order a la carte.
Okay? Right.
And he usually had three. He had, he switched over pretty early to vegetarian, you know, not vegan, but vegetarian. And then he had kind of a standard, and then he'd have a super deluxe one. And you would go in and each guest would have to choose choose one whole menu. You, because it was, I think it was seven courses. It didn't matter which menu. So, everybody would get their first, second, third through seventh serving at the same
courses,
time.
Right.
Yeah. And, but he started off, first of all, he is not a graduate of any cooking school, but he loved cooking. And he started off as a caterer sort of trendy, fashionable part of Chicago. And he just developed this very, very passionate clientele of people that he would cater for. And that became the base, that would become the base for his, when he opened a restaurant, he immediately had raving fans. And, hard to get into, very hard to get into. I was probably there a dozen times, during the period. But he started, if he had started with the possibility of a ghost kitchen, when he was a caterer, he might have gone in a completely different direction.
Amazing.
Yeah, but
it's such a good time to be.
What I'm noticing, and the thing that I'm most fascinated with, is the invisibility of the Cloudlandia economy to those who are against it, are lacking confidence about it, or don't think it's very important. That check those three boxes and you don't see what's happening.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. And that's the funny thing. It's like having 3D glasses when you see this, when you see it, it's immediate that you see all the whole complement of opportunities. And I think your chapter of that, it seems too good to be true, is really accurate. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we end up kind of,
The way I stated
voluntary
though,
gravity.
True.
That's a good word.
It's true, but almost too good.
I think that's a thing that we apply voluntary gravity to our situations. That I just want to float a little bit.
Yeah, I think everybody's got a personal gravitational system.
Yeah,
I don't want to be thinking about everything all the time. I want to be thinking about particular things most of the time. I've got some room for new topics, but I think all of us have sort of the main focus, and that's what makes us great and makes us capable and makes us unique. It was like Einstein, is known as the discoverer of relativity. And he said, oh, no. He said there were many, many people, at the turn of the 20th century. He says there are many people, physicists, thinking about relativity. And he says, but I'm the first person to think about it and not think about anything else for 10 minutes.
That's funny. That's you and I for Cloudlandia.
Yeah.
In 10 years. That's great.
Well, you're the go-to person if you want to a guided tour of Cloudlandia.
The mayor of Cloudlandia, right. The welcome committee.
Yes. Yes.
It's so funny.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
You're the Cheshire Cat of Cloudlandia.
That's it. So I noticed I have, I'm excited about Tuesday. I noticed I have something on my calendar for tomorrow with Strategic. Is there a workshop tomorrow? Or
not that I know of. It may be a check-in at 6 o'clock. We're going to have a social hour in Spatial Web.
That's what it is. Okay.
You go in and you create a avatar of yourself and you're able to wander around. You're not confined to boxes. You go in through Zoom and you can talk around, but it's, you're Dean and I'm Dan, and we can go from group to group and talk to each other, socialize.
I love it.
Awesome. We're just experimenting.
Why not?
Yeah. And
I'll see you there.
Yep, I'll be there. That's 6 Eastern time. 6 Eastern time.
Okay. Perfect.
All right.
All right, Dan. Enjoy your day. Thanks.
Great to chat.
Yes, always.